Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mr. Randolph and crew coming from the podcast studio, room number 340 at Streeter Township High School. And this is Just Another Movie Podcast. And today we are going to be reviewing and talking about the 1980s classic, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. One of John Hughes's classic films that basically ruled the teenage world at that time and is a one-liner quip machine even till this day. So, all right, let's get everybody introduced again. My name is Mr. Randolph, and I have to my right
Xavier Dean,
Eric Granados,
Kieran Cassidy,
Nathaniel Harkar.
Mr. Nathan Beck could not be with us here today. He will be back hopefully next week for our next podcast, but in the meantime, we are going to talk about Ferris Bueller's Day Off. All right. So, how many of you had seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off before we decided to do this film? Just speak. Yep. Don't raise your hands.
Yes.
This is not.
Definitely.
There's a camera there.
Yeah, but it's not on.
No, we should use it. Yeah.
We should turn it on.
Okay, Kieran, you'd seen it before?
Yes, but not for a few years.
Not for a few years. Yes. Okay. All right, so when you watched it this time, was it better, or did you understand it more, or?
I definitely understood it more because I was very young when I watched it the first time, and I wasn't into the whole teen humor. So, yeah, I definitely understand and get it more now that I'm older.
Well, that's good. That's a positive. All right. And, Eric, you had never seen it before, either?
I've seen it before.
You had seen it
before. I just don't remember the name until I looked it up.
Ah, okay.
I saw the images and I remembered watching it.
Okay. Well, that's cool. That's good. All right. So, obviously, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is set in the 1980s. I forget what year specifically, but it is about a young man who basically calls off sick from school, and he has done so several times, and this cracks me up. He's getting in trouble because he's called off 9 times from school. 9 times. Well, kids, that's laughable, considering I have seen students here in the building with over 65 attendance issues. 65 attendance, whatevers. Whether it be for tardies or lates or for absences and whatnot. But, yeah,
that's extreme.
That is extreme.
That's not counting any school functions, is it?
No, that's not counting school functions. That's not counting, field trips and or sporting events or anything else. So,
dang.
9 times.
Wonderful.
So, yeah. So he decides to take a day off, and he ropes his fellows into going with him. And chaos ensues, basically. So, what do you guys think?
It's a pretty good movie.
I think it's very comical. I mean, you could always argue that some of the jokes are a little bit cringy, but no.
What
it's
do
actually,
you mean? What jokes are a little cringy?
No, just like just like teenage humor in general. Like, it's just teenagers being silly, you know. There's a lot of that attitude with it, but I think it's actually pretty humorous. It's definitely, it was the depiction of the culture of the time, definitely. It's kind of like the last movie we were talking about. It's a romanticized version of teenage life during that time. So,
I would think so. And John Hughes, I think, really, he kind of nailed that very much so with his, his movies during this time, which also include like movies like 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, Say Anything, Some Kind of Wonderful, Pretty in Pink, to name just a few. And he, well, he brought a whole, you know, generation of actors to the screen, and basically spoke for my generation's teenagers at the time. And definitely they don't all hold up 100% compared to today's culture necessarily, but I think that the themes that are there are definitely hold up. And so I think that that's very interesting, definitely. But what else? What do you guys think?
The absences, like, does our school chase down kids?
Okay. Like, well, let's just put it this way: we don't send people out on a quest. Like Rooney was on this quest to find Ferris. Because let's be honest, it's just one kid in a school of 1,500 kids. And while, yeah, he was kind of his holy grail, if you will, to catch him, no, not in this school. There are far more pressing issues than one halfway decent kid from a, you know. So, yeah. And he really is just being absent. That's all. He's not setting fire to anything, causing any issues. Just being absent is not a reason to hunt them down. So what do you think, Xavier? You look like you had something to say.
Well, you were talking about how he wasn't doing anything wrong, yet I'm pretty sure throughout the movie there were a few things that he did that could questionably be against the law, like, say, jumping onto a parade float during a big parade.
All right. Nothing overtly criminal.
Or maybe identity theft in order to get into a restaurant to eat pancreas.
To eat pancreas. We ate pancreas. Oh, yeah. Good old Abe Froman, the sausage king of Chicago. That still pops up from time to time in popular culture, the Abe Froman bit. And what really pops up from time to time is the teacher, Bueller.
Yeah.
Bueller. Anyone? Bueller. And that just, yeah, that cracks me up. You know, Ben Stein, the guy who played the teacher, was actually a speechwriter for presidents. And
really?
Yeah, he was a speechwriter for presidents. I can't tell you specifically which ones, but that was his job primarily, was a speechwriter. And he actually is a highly intelligent, very articulate individual who has done some pretty spectacular things over his career, but he is, of course, most widely known as the teacher from Ferris Bueller's Day Off and from the Visine commercials. You know, I don't know if you guys have seen those or not, but he's in those too. But anyway, that's okay. All right. Well, Xavier's brought some questions for us here for the movie, so let's dive into those a little bit and get some answers from everybody. I'll answer last. We'll start with Nate.
All right, so the first question is, what do you guys feel is one of the best parts about this movie, specifically?
The fact that the whole school started a movement in order to save Ferris, and it got all around the country. And I don't know if they got around the world, but I know for a fact it got across at least the state, and I think that's one of the greatest things
all
about it.
All in a single day without cell phones.
The Wrigley Field had it up on the chart.
Yes, and I actually have a problem with that part. It's that, you know, throughout the movie, it is said that, or throughout the movie, Ferris is trying to, you know, have a day off, you know, staying away from his his parents and principal or dean of students, Rooney.
Rooney.
But with how far, save Ferris has been, I'm shocked that the parents haven't looked at that at all.
Well, it was, you know, the whole thing was kind of interesting because, first of all, you could maybe do something like that in a day now with cell phones and the internet and that sort of thing. But at this time, it absolutely would have been improbable, if not outright impossible, to get.
These were determined people.
They were very determined because it you know, they took off right from the moment they found out that he was sick, and then it blossomed into this ground, you know, this grassroots movement to get money for Ferris, and it even ended up on a water tower.
And I just love it. It's
by
like
the end of the day on a water tower, that
forever. They also sent a bunch of people to Ferris's house.
Yeah, I know, the florists and the naughty nurse and.
But it's just so many levels of irony, like the fact that like there's all the diseases out there, there's cancer, there's so many terrible things, and yet they say, oh, Ferris is sick, let's do something. If we had that much determination, we could help so many people.
Well, yeah, but keep in mind, you know, think about what Grace said about Ferris. He's a righteous dude. He's in with everyone. Everyone likes him. He's wonderful. He's a righteous dude. I love Grace. Grace, who just mysteriously pulls pencils out of her hair all the entire time. Three or four different pencils coming out of her hair. Oh, well. All right. Okay, Kieran, what do you think was the best part?
I just think, like, throughout the movie, just the teenage brain and how it works. Because, like, I know towards the end of the movie, after they've ridden around town for a while, the car that they used, they wanted to try to erase the miles. And they tried running the car in reverse to get rid of the miles, but then ended up not working at all.
Yes,
it did not turn out well in their favor.
Well, you know, like you said, the teenage brain, or the brain that doesn't know how the odometer works. it logically speaking, you would think you go forward, it moves forward. You go backwards, it goes backwards. Well, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. But
there's a logic, but it's wrong.
Yeah,
it is a faulty logic indeed. Yeah. A logic based on fallacy rather than fact. Anything else you can think of that you really enjoyed?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, Eric, what do you think?
You know how Bueller uses a childish voice to get his parents to believe he's sick?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he keeps that charade up, even in the end of the movie.
Oh, and then he becomes a genius after they're gone? Yeah, he talks like a maniacal genius with his plan.
Okay, my favorite part of the film, flat out, talking to sort of that, is that this is the first film that steadily uses the fourth wall break.
Yeah.
I mean, think of this. I mean, have you ever seen any other film other than Deadpool now, which, by the way, Deadpool played off of this at the end of the movie with Ferris Bueller. But it's funny because throughout the entire film, there are fourth wall break on fourth wall break and again and again and again. And it works. It works brilliantly to set up what was going on in the film. And it really made us a part of the film as well. Mm-hmm. I found it absolutely fascinating the first time I saw it. And I was like, what's going on? Why is he talking to us? You know, but
I think the only other extreme of that would be like maybe The Office. Like maybe that's kind of style. I mean, that's a little bit different. That's a mockumentary.
The Office's fourth wall break is more of, instead of talking to the audience, it's talking to like the cameraman or the producer behind the cameraman or something
It's almost like world building a little bit.
It is, but sorta, I guess. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, Xavier. What did you think was the best part of the movie?
I think my by far the best part was the scene where Ferris was jumping over the fences to beat his parents and his sister back home.
So the very last part when, you know, as he leaves his girlfriend, and he's like, holy.
They did a recreation of that in a Pizza Hut commercial.
Yes, they did.
With the kid from Stranger Things.
Yes, they did.
They did a bunch of them. They did a bunch of Domino's commercials with that guy parodying this movie.
Was it Domino's?
Yes.
Was it Domino's?
It was. It was for the Domino's tracker.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, the phone thing. That's right. So, yeah, that's well, again, it keeps creeping up in pop culture and our society even today. Oh, and Mia Sara is so pretty. Yes, she's young there, but she is pretty, okay?
Jeez, I'm not going to attack you twice.
You always attack me.
It was a joke for one day. I know you're prepared. You're already, like, you're gritting against me. You're like, dang, this kid's here.
I'm just going to bring my Nerf gun in next time and just shoot you
in
the head.
It's okay. I haven't said anything yet.
Mm-hmm. Not yet. You will.
You don't know.
I'm just waiting.
Yes.
He'll probably anyway. Say something.
Yeah, of course he will, Kieran. He can't help himself. No. Anyway, so yeah, I already mentioned my favorite part, which was the fourth wall break, but there is so much in this movie that just cracks me up.
Yeah.
The fact that in the background, if you're not looking carefully at the background of this film, you miss so much.
Yeah.
Like when Rooney is cleaning himself off and he's at like the little arcade pizza place, and on the screen behind is Ferris catching a ball, foul ball at the stadium, Wrigley Field, and then, you know, it's just...
Do a screen focus thing with that at all, or is it just...
They do just a little bit, but it's kind of after the fact, you know?
Yeah.
It's very after the fact, so you have to be real careful to kind of watch that, but... and of course, Rooney is just the absolute epitome of the ridiculous administrative person. You know, he's every cliche stereotype that, you know, John Hughes really had a low opinion of administrators in his films, like the administrator, the assistant principal from The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
You know, he is just absolutely horrible, and Rooney's not much better. The only thing that maybe makes Rooney a little more lovable is that he's completely dumb, you know, and his malice is just completely misplaced. But
yes.
I don't know. All right, Xavier, what else you got for us?
All right, so going back to what you were talking about for the actress that played Sloane.
Yeah, Mia Sara.
Yeah. Yep. Well, this is revolving around her character. Throughout the movie, we see her, you know, we know that she's in a relationship with Ferris. But in multiple parts of the movie, we can see her as, as more of a... a girlfriend figure for Cameron rather than just Ferris. So, what do you guys think? Would she be better with, or would she be better with Ferris Bueller or
with
Cameron?
Oh, I'm gonna leave this to you guys. I'll...
Why?
No, come on, chime in.
Well, I mean, the show hints more towards Ferris. Because, I mean, he's the main character, of course. But throughout the show, it definitely, I think it works better with Ferris as the main character. The dynamic between the two.
Mm-hmm.
He's the maniacal genius. And the whole idea is they got the girlfriend, then they got the friend that's tagging along. And then he has some sort of comedic offerings to the group. I think it's a good dynamic that way to think of it as Ferris's girlfriend. Personally. Mm-hmm. So, does anybody else think anything different?
What do you guys think?
I agree with Nate. I mean, I don't really see anything else with
that. You don't think that Cameron and Sloane could have been together?
I don't know. I mean, considering I don't really remember that part or that, like, detail of the movie, so.
Well, according to Dean's, something that Dean knows about that was in the original script that wasn't in the movie, there's something hinting at the idea that Ferris wasn't necessarily the greatest boyfriend. Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the original script, John Hughes had it where Ferris Bueller went to a strip club in between. This was in between.
Bear with us.
This was in between the art museum and the taxi ride.
Interesting. Well, that doesn't make him not necessarily
a
bad boyfriend.
It just makes him a naughty boy.
Well,
didn't he try to be like... talk to the strippers and all that. He tried to, like, get the strippers to like him or something?
No, what I was saying was he was talking, like, he originally had a monologue to us, the audience, about how, you know, it's a common stereotype that, you know, teenagers only care about one thing.
You all know.
Yes, food. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what he's talking about. Yeah,
about
it's food, right? Right, Xavier?
The free buffet
sure.
in the strip
yeah.
club.
Yeah, are you sure. good? But, and then he goes on to saying that he also pays more attention to, you know, less the, you know, doing it and more of a...
I'm actually having a better time watching Xavier struggle with speaking about this topic than I am anything else right at the moment. I'll save you, Xavier. Let's just say the word. He's talking about sex, and it's okay.
What? What's that?
But instead of...
You will never, ever know, Nate. Never.
Dang.
All right.
But he was talking more about how he pays more attention to the romantic stuff, like, you
and
know, dinner.
Nate has left the building.
There he goes.
Bye, no, Nate.
Right, he's talking about romantic dinners and stuff like that.
Yes.
And okay,
actually be evidence to him being... Unless he's joking, that's actually good evidence towards him being a good boyfriend. If that's what
no,
he means.
I think that he's actually a very good boyfriend to Sloane, and I think the two of them get along famously. I do think, though, ultimately, that Cameron is going to have a difficult time with relationships at first, but his will last longer than Ferris's will. His relationships will not be flash in the pan, fly by night sort of relationships where I think that he and Sloane are suited to one another, but I don't see them lasting much past, you know, and there's evidence of that throughout the entire film. Every time Ferris is alone, he's surrounded by other women, like on the float. There are all those beautiful women on the float. And when he's running for home, what does he do? He stops to shake hand with the sunbathers.
He's in quote there. And he's you know, and he's there for a good time, not a long time.
Exactly.
I guess
yes, very much so. Very much so. And that does. There's nothing wrong with that ultimately with Ferris because that's his character. But I think that ultimately Cameron is going to end up being the. Well, I think Ferris did have it right, though. The first person that Cameron is going to sleep with, he'll marry that person, and then they'll walk all over him forever.
Mm-hmm.
But that also changes when what happens to the car.
Yeah.
Because...
So what ends up happening with the car is Cameron starts, you know, beating up onto the car because he's upset with his father and... with how his life was. And then the brick that kept the car up so that they could go reverse ends up slipping from the tire.
Yep.
And the car
of course crashes right out the window. And
what
happened? Right. How bad is it? You killed the car.
No, it's okay.
Did it crash into like a river or a lake
no,
or a creek?
No, it's a ravine. It's a ravine in out behind the house. There are a lot of places like that up near Chicago actually. But what do you, this is my opinion about this. I think this is more of a story about Cameron than Ferris ultimately, because Cameron has more growth than any other character in the movie, because he does come to the point where he starts out, you know, miserable in bed, and this day off becomes somewhat of a liberation story for him.
Yes.
You know, the car being that, you know, the example of love that he doesn't get from his father, but...
Yes, and I can actually sidetrack that to one of the questions I was going to
ask. Go ahead, shoot.
So there's a common theory going around involving Ferris Bueller's Day Off that Ferris Bueller isn't actually... He isn't a person. He is instead a figment of Cameron's imagination to try and get Cameron to, you know, better accept life to what it should be rather than what it actually is.
Is this theory kind of like saying that Matthew Broderick is Cameron's Brad Pitt, like from Fight Club?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. So.
Interesting. So this figment of his imagination's having arguments with him about taking the car, and that could be a more, well.
Well, that would, so, I mean, Ferris Bueller is more of, if you're taking it from the point of view that he, Cameron is the main character. That means that Ferris Bueller is more of a narrator, and that would fit with that. I mean, I'm not saying it's real, but the whole narrator type thing would kind of fit more with a figment of someone's imagination if you really wanted to get into it, like, because they would act like the narrator to their lives. But they'd also be interacting at the same time.
I could see that.
Yeah,
Eric, what do you think?
Okay, so... I just feel like we're calling him, like, going insane. Cameron, who is, like, sick, it would make sense if it would be a fragment.
A fragment, yeah. Maybe. I could see that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the whole throughout the whole thing, Ferris is avoiding his father. Ferris is avoiding being seen by other people. And so if that's the case, then he would also have to be making up Sloan. And Sloan is obviously interacting with other human beings.
The theory also goes around that Salome is actually Cameron's girlfriend. It's just the way Cameron sees it. Salome isn't in love with him. She is instead in love with...
this other character that lives within him?
Yes.
Interesting. Oh. This might be a little deeper than what I thought we were going to go.
This is good, though, because whether or not it's real, it's a good analogy for the dynamic between the characters within the show itself.
Yeah.
It's a great way to at least, like, it's like when you take mythological stories and you look at the meaning of them. Mm-hmm. Like, the philosophical meaning, it's similar. It's like, oh, we can still, I mean, some people might actually believe that theory, or probably not. It's just for the sake of taking another perspective of the film. Like, hey, let's think of it as Ferris Bueller is this character that is supposed to complement, or what would you say? What's the term when they're kind of like, they butt against each other, kind of?
The antagonist?
Kind of. Because he both, like, complements and antagonizes Cameron at the same time.
Very much so.
And I think that's what that theory would hint towards. It's this kind of, you could also put this as a struggle within Cameron himself, a struggle within the friend group, a struggle within the relationship. It could be looking at just the struggles within a teenager. You could go a million places with this. So, I mean, it's not like completely outlandish to think about that concept of, at least. So that's the good side. That's what I see that could be seen.
All right. I can see that. I can see that, definitely. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Xavier, what else you got?
All right, so there's been talks between the ending of this movie, or when this movie got released, to today, that there was a rumor that John Hughes was working on a sequel.
To Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, there were complications going around with that, primarily with how the movie ended up. The question I'm planning on asking is, do you guys think that Ferris Bueller either needs or deserves a sequel, or is it just great, you know, or should just be one single movie?
No. It has to be a single movie, standalone. I don't think you could. It's a sporadic story. It's about a single day. That's kind of the magic of it. To make another movie about another day similar to this one would kind of take away from the I guess, majesty of that one day where Ferris Bueller goes out and wreaks havoc on the world.
Yeah, but they could also have it where, if they did make a sequel, it could be like, you know, Cameron and Ferris and Sloan, you know, they're now adults. They haven't seen each other in a while. So they're trying to get back together.
And then their kids do the same thing. Brilliant, Xavier Dean. I mean, that would make more sense to me if you were like, if you had the kids doing the same thing, but within the context of, like, our culture nowadays, like telling a story about our teenagers nowadays. I mean, that would make sense. Yeah. I mean, that could be a viable sequel. I just think it should be a standalone.
I actually see any sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off being the darkest of comedies.
Mm.
It would be so dark. Ferris sitting in a lifeless cubicle at a job that he hates.
Now reality hits.
and he's sitting there, and he doesn't even have a window to look out. He's just looking at a picture of Chicago. He contemplates throwing himself out the window at some point that he doesn't have, and I just see it being a very dark, dark thing, because it would have to be in order to get that humor, that spark back for this, you know, because this is pretty upbeat and pretty light throughout the entire thing.
There is definitely a big subculture for dark humor nowadays.
Oh, yes, there is.
And I love some dark humor.
Me as well.
Not some of the crazy stuff, but I really like some of it. And I would definitely appreciate that kind of
humor. Yeah, but not everybody gets dark humor, you know, kind of like vaccines.
It's very
and
neat.
Clean water. And
the earth being round.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or a pear-shaped, I guess.
Or that. Yeah, whatever.
In fact, I can actually sidetrack what you were talking about Ferris in a cubicle to another question I have.
Okay, go.
So, during one of the scenes where it's just Cameron and Sloan, and they're talking about Ferris, specifically what he could be in the future, what do you think the perfect job for Ferris Bueller would be? Just based
on... Eric, you go first on this one.
Working at a circus, probably.
You really think he would be a ringmaster or something like that?
I mean, it would make sense. He can control a crowd.
I could actually see him as a movie producer. You know, somebody who has great influence and is there to sell. You know, yeah. And he's all over the place and kind of, hey, what's going on? You know, hey. Kind of sleazy and slimy, and but, you know, very, very personable. So
you mean a politician?
No. No, he's too charming for a politician. What do you think, Karen?
Maybe some, like, sort of media influencer who travels around the world to get, like, that creative energy out and just the energy of, like, getting out of everyday life.
Like a
travel blogger, kind of.
Travel
maybe?
Blogger or a, like a positive, what do they call those guys who go around and do speeches? What do they call them? It's like a positive action speaker or something like
motivational
that.
Speakers.
Motivational, yeah. Thank you. The yeah. Motivational speaker, yeah. That would be, I could see that, but that would still end up with him wanting to jump out a window somewhere, I think, at some point. So, Nate, what do you think? What would he be good at?
Well, obviously, he'd be good at jumping out that window. I think he would be, okay, there are like two things I have in mind. A defense attorney or a strip club owner or some sort of hipster of some kind. Because of the scene that you mentioned, I'm just saying, you know what? He would fit great in there.
You know, I'm pretty sure that's the reason why John Hughes took that scene out of it.
Running the show.
I still think that would have been funny to leave in. Just have him mistakenly open a door, you know, get separated from Cameron and Sloan, and then mistakenly open the door, and he walks in, and it's all this, you know. Just loud music and bright lights. the smell of baby powder.
Thank you for that descriptive detail.
I'm just saying.
No,
yeah. You know.
No, but honestly, because of the fact that he's a very smart kid, he's able to work his way around situations, I think a defense attorney might work.
I think maybe. I think a lawyer of some sort. Yeah, I could see.
Specifically defense attorney, because he'll be able to even defend the criminals.
Well, yeah. I mean, he basically is one. So yeah, very much so. Yeah. Okay. All right, Xavier, what else you got?
All right. So, you know, at the end of the movie, we see Jeannie, who's been trying to spend this entire day proving Ferris is guilty to her parents. We see her defending Ferris at the end when Rooney gets to the house and takes the key before Ferris is able to go in. Would you, like, say it was your sibling who
good question.
Pulled the Ferris. Yeah. Would you do the exact same thing Jeannie did or no?
So, do you guys all have brothers and sisters?
No.
I mean, no, Kieran, yeah. You don't, so, but the rest of you do? Okay. So, say it was your brother or your sister who had been playing at this all day long and getting away with this for weeks, months even, right? So, would you, in the end up defending, or would you throw him under the bus?
I think a little combination of both might work, because, like, you don't want to ruin your sibling's life. And like, I'm assuming if it were like my brothers, if they weren't my, like, I like to think my brothers are great people. So if my brothers decided to do some crazy thing like that, I think, oh, they're still really great. So I want to make them stop somehow, but without ruining their lives for the time being.
Okay.
So some kind of like both way type of thing.
Okay. I can see that. Karen, I'm going to make you answer even though you don't have a sibling.
All right, that's fair. If I had an older sibling that would do that, I don't know, I'd probably mix of both, like Nate said, because like, I feel like I would be a little bit jealous that they're doing that, but also at the same time, I wouldn't, because, like, you know, they need to get their act together and eventually go to school, because, you know, I'd care about them and want them to have, like, a good future and good education, so I'd probably tell them, like, you know, this has been fun, but you should probably go back to school eventually. You can't keep doing this forever.
I can see that.
Yeah. And you don't need to defend their actions, just more like defend them as people.
Yeah,
I can see that, definitely. Although, let's think about it, though. Jeannie did get a pretty kick-butt car. I mean, she got a little Pontiac Fiero. So, and while they weren't the safest cars, as a teenager driving a Fiero, That's awesome. All right. Oh, well. All right, Eric, what do you think? Would you throw your sibling under the bus?
I mean, I wouldn't care. I mean, I have, like, two younger ones and now an older one that actually goes to school.
Yeah.
And I would probably bail them out because even if I try not to, my mom would just, like, think I'm lying to them.
Oh, yeah. Lying to get them into trouble, yeah. Even. Yeah. Okay.
Just like they depict Jeannie as well. Or, right, was it? I forgot her name. The sister.
Yeah, Jeannie. Yeah, Jeannie. Yeah, Jennifer Grey, the actress.
Yeah.
Yep. But however, in the original screenplay, there's actually supposed to be another set of siblings.
Right, you were saying that. I think that could have, it would have been too much. It would have added too much. Yeah. Too much confusion, you know? Mm-hmm. But, and would they have been younger? Would they have been older? Would they, you know?
They were supposed to be younger.
Younger siblings. Ooh, that was even.
Stock exchange.
Yeesh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I have one more question. Okay. There were supposed to be more, but we ended up getting to a bunch of them.
Okay, already. Well, that's fine. No, that's good.
So the final question I have is, if you were Ferris Bueller and you were planning the perfect day off, what specifically would you do?
Let's see. What have I done when I played hooky from work?
Self-incrimination.
I'm sorry. You mean when I've been really sick from work?
Yep.
Yeah. Depending upon the time of year, my ideal day would be to have breakfast, probably at a restaurant, so I get, like, you know, the breakfast. Then I would probably go fishing for 2-3 hours, depending upon how well they're biting. Then I would go see a movie, because that would be my idea of being a good time. Then I would eat again, probably dinner about that time. Then I would play video games, depending upon which ones I had. But yeah. Yeah, play some video games, you know, depending upon, you know, who was around. Maybe invite them over, you know, play a board game, that sort of thing, play cards. And then that would be that, yeah. That would be my Ferris Bueller's day off. So what do you think, Xavier?
If I could pick out the perfect, like for me personally, the perfect Ferris Bueller day, you know, A, it would be a day where it'd be a day where I don't have to go to school. Like, say, I would choose the SATs. Since I'm a senior, I wouldn't have to go there. I'd probably, you know, wake up, go for some sort of run, and then either go to Starved Rock or another set of trails somewhere close by and go hiking.
All right. Very cool. Eric, what about your Ferris Bueller's day off?
I would probably do the same exact as you would, just play video games and then just eat constant, like, junk food probably. Just go to a store with some quarters I found through the cushions of the couch.
Okay.
Go to the store and buy some chips and just lay down, watch YouTube or play video games.
All right. Kieran?
Are we saying this can be with other people or just
sure.
by ourselves? Sure.
Well, right. Ferris's day off was with other people,
that's
so yeah.
That's true. For me, I would not want to stay in Streeter at all. I'd probably want to go to, like, Chicago or something, like, walk around Chicago with friends and, like, go shopping a little bit, maybe go bowling, and just, like, spend the whole day there and go out to, like, a nice restaurant with them and be able to just, like...
So yours would be less, like introspective and more like Ferris's day off, then.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
You're more gregarious than us three mushrooms over here. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. What about you, Nate?
I'd want to, there's a couple of things. I'd probably want to just envelop myself in music, write music, play music, maybe attend a good concert, attend a good, like from a good orchestra or
like
chamber group.
Live?
Yes.
Are you okay over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I just accidentally hit this little thing.
Oh, well, don't do that.
I'll try not to.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'd want to really just, like, and just I like to contemplate things. So I also add that into my day. Maybe like I want to have time to sit and enjoy enjoy nature.
Okay.
And that would kind of all tie into it, and I get to just think. And
deep thoughts, like starring
just,
Nate.
Yeah, just like look at the beauty of everything.
Gotcha.
That's my kind of day.
Yeah, it's something that not everyone does. You know, they're
this is true.
Yeah, they're always, you know, on their phones or sitting inside watching TV.
That's what I'm saying.
When there's a bunch of trails, like in street or alone, that they could go down. Like, we have the Killers that runs from the new park over by the school all the way around. And then we have Spring Lake, which has a bunch of branches of
absolutely
trails.
There's so much beauty everywhere that nobody seems to even want to see.
Well, you know what? And I think that's part of what Ferris was saying, you know? How could he possibly hope to spend the day in school on such a perfect day? You know? We've all woken up and felt pretty good about the day and thought, oh, I've got to go and be a human being versus being what I want to be, you know?
That's not what I
want to
do.
No.
I've never had that feeling.
You've never once had... Yeah, please. Really? You've never had that feeling where you've woken up and you've I don't want to do what I'm supposed to do today?
Not really.
Oh, I feel like that
to
all
be fair,
the time.
Usually when it's something I have to do, it's usually something that either I want to do or it's something that I know if I don't get done, there's going to be consequences.
Okay, but then part of not getting that done and part of that having those consequences is kind of that rush that Ferris was kind of, you know, that not letting, what was it, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop to look around, it might pass you by sort of thing. Well, that's, you know, all throughout the movie, he kind of pauses and reminds us, hey, we got to stop and smell the roses as it is, you know, and damn the consequences, you know. I mean, shoot, I wish I had the guts to jump up onto a float and, you know, lip sync to two different songs and get away with it. Or, you know what, I do appreciate, and we kind of got this running in the background, but Jeannie just came on the screen. I appreciate Jeannie's anger because from my own standpoint, as I was the oldest brother, okay, and so therefore I was the one who, quote unquote, set the example. And so because I set the example, I had to, you know, behave more, if you will. Not that it always happened that way, but that was kind of the role. So I get where she's upset that he's getting away with everything. But to be honest, her day didn't end up too poorly. I mean, she met creepy Charlie Sheen at the end, and that worked out okay. She was snogging him, so that was okay. And she just turned into a little giddy girl then too, which was this perfect teenager. Yeah, she's walking down the stairs out of the police station. She was hilarious. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that you would have done a complete flip like that? I'm gonna look at you, Karen.
Oh, no.
You know, come on, Karen. What do you think?
If you met the... because she's a woman.
yeah,
oh,
actually,
awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Restate the question.
Okay, so yeah, so she meets that dude at the police station, and obviously they hit it off, even though at first she was threatening to take a testicle, you know, because she went, you know, crunched her hand together. And so, but what do you think? Would you have reacted the same way, or do you think that you could have then forgiven Ferris for having kind of that little romantic interlude?
I mean, I probably would have been able to forgive him because I'm not a type of person who likes to, like, I don't know, I guess hold grudges for too long, especially if it's someone I care about, because then I feel bad and I don't want to, like, hinder our relationship.
I can see that. All right. Anyway. All right, so there's not let's talk about the music a little bit in this. There's not a whole lot that stands out, with the exception of the final song in this movie. It is done by a band named Yellow, and it was called Oh Yeah. And it became a smash hit at the time that this came out. And it was everywhere. And you can still hear it from time to time now. But at that time, it was everywhere. And I will tag that onto the end of this podcast so that you all can hear it, too. But it's absolutely one of the most ridiculous 1980s techno synth sort of pieces you could ever. It is so bad and yet so good at the same time. It just fits with what was going on. And yeah, it's just unbelievably cheesy and kitsch, but it's ultimately 80s as well. And so that definitely added to it. So, well, I think we're winding down here, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm going to go around the room and get everybody's final thoughts about Ferris Bueller's Day Off and see what you all think. So, Nathan, what are your final thoughts about Ferris Bueller?
I think it's hilarious. I mean, definitely not something you should necessarily take as a way to form your morality or your way of life around, but it's a good, fun movie. It's a hilarious film. And it still has some good commentaries on just life as a teenager. Life, and it has some good commentaries on society. It has some interesting questions that it brings up.
Definitely, definitely.
Kieran? I think it's a great, funny movie that's just really good for, like, teenagers, and it really, like, I don't know, I guess just encaptures teens at around that time and just how teens are now and how it's just kind of timeless, I guess.
I would agree with that, too. It is kind of timeless because the teenagers still act the same way.
Oh, yeah.
If you looked at the teenagers in the classroom or the hallways, they were definitely, I mean, the drooling on the desk daily. People fall asleep and drool on their desk daily. And, you know, people stare at teachers with that thousand-yard stare like they're paying attention. But as a matter of fact, have you guys had teachers like the teachers that were represented in this? Like the teacher who repeats everything endlessly, or the teacher that was like emoting over much? In what way? You know, that sort of thing. Do you have teachers that are like that?
Not exactly like that. I've had some weird teachers before. Like this one teacher who like treats the classroom as if it's a war ground between the teacher and the students. Like, you don't want to go to war with me. Like, that's like I've had some weird teachers, but also some good ones. So, like, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
An example of the good ones is Mr. Randolph.
Oh, well, thank you.
Trying to get brownie points.
Well, he's no longer in my class, so he doesn't, you know, report to me for any grades. So.
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah.
No, you were one of the good ones, definitely.
Oh, well, yes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Eric, what are your final thoughts on Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
First of all, you want to, you know, soft has been in my pocket. Yeah.
The gummy bear.
Yeah. I mean, it's a gusher, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks.
I was over here eating them. I'm over here, but I need you to, when you come back next April, like, you're coming back, right, for teaching?
Me? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I need you to do the daily language like anyone. Well, someone's raising their hand. I need you to do that.
I will, definitely. Yeah. I've done it in the past, but you probably didn't realize I was doing it because...
I was, but...
Okay.
I need you to say anyone like, constantly.
Yeah, okay. I can do that. That's fair.
And I want to point out Cameron pointing out the... I like the scene where in the art where you're just staring into the
abyss, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I do that randomly and just look into nothing, to the non-important piece of the work. So, yeah, entirely, this movie was pretty fun. I liked remembering it and watching it. So, yeah, I don't know. I just so Fair focused enough. Up on the gusher thing.
No, that was a good joke. That was good. That was excellent. Yeah, you played it very well. All right, Xavier, what do you got?
It is a very fun movie. It's definitely one of the better movies I've seen. I wouldn't precisely call it the best because I've seen some really good movies. But, you know, if this movie is ever on TV, I would definitely stop to watch it. You know, acting's good. The music in it's good. I think that the fact that the suspension of disbelief that's in it is what really sells the movie because, you know, sure, you know, kids today, we couldn't really get away with as much as what Ferris and Cameron and Sloan did, like, you know, identity theft in order to in order to eat pancreas, but...
I wouldn't quite call it identity theft. I would think reservation theft would be more like what that was than anything. But they were still borrowing Abe Froben's identity to eat at this place where I'm surprised they were able to afford it, let alone. And there's the other thing. Ferris was just throwing money around the entire day.
Yes. In fact, it was actually specified in the script. I don't remember if it was something that Ferris said during the movie, but it was specified that the pancreas was $75.
Oh, I think I could eat a $10 cheeseburger and get the same result.
This scene really messes with me.
Oh, the mud.
Yeah.
Well,
poor guy. But no, also
I don't feel bad for Rooney. You can't
feel
bad for Rooney ever. Yeah. He has set himself up for every bad thing that happens to himself. I mean, seriously, the guy's ego is just unbelievable. But all right. Well, we hope that you've enjoyed Just Another Movie Podcast conversation about Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And so let's talk about what we're going to review next week. What are some ideas, guys? Kieran, I see you have your hand up. Thank you. That plays well on radio, by the way.
Yes. I know. That's why I do it. Anyway, this movie popped up in just randomly throughout this podcast, and I just thought about it. Maybe Heathers, since if we're on like this theme of like teenagers and like old 80s like movies, maybe.
I like the idea. Heathers is really dark.
Yeah.
Talk about a dark comedy. Heathers is one of the darkest. Let's keep that one on the back burner for the time being. I like that idea and I do want to do it, but let's keep it on the back burner. Right. Let's hear some more other ideas.
Okay, so I don't have an idea right now for a movie, but I do have an idea on like so far we've done movies that we've all seemed to enjoy, you know, Up, we've done The Sandlot, we've done Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and we've given positive reviews for these. But we haven't done a movie that...
We don't like.
Yes. And I think it'd be...
Like the Emoji Movie. That's a good one.
I see where you're going with this. Yeah, I see where you're going. And it does...
And I wasn't going to go to the extremes of the Emoji Movie.
No, well, that's a fun one to pick apart.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I was thinking, like, a movie that, you know, someone here would like, but someone else doesn't.
There are a lot of films that fall under that category for me. And so what I'm going to propose is this. Let's give this a couple of days of thought. Mm-hmm. And by Friday of this week, you come up with the movie that you think personally would drive you the most crazy to watch.
Finding Nemo.
What?
Well, no. You don't like Finding Nemo?
I've seen it way too many times.
We're already starting too early. We'll save it for next week.
Okay, save it for the next time. Okay, so then you just guys just drop me an email at srandolph@streeterhs.org. If you have a suggestion for us, that would be great. Otherwise, the rest of you, just let me know what you think would be an absolutely irritating movie for you to not only watch but to talk about. There are a lot of them out there for me. And as a matter of fact, Xavier, you picked the one movie originally when you were wanting to be a part of this podcast. You picked The Room. That is the one movie on this planet that I would sooner set on fire, burn it, pee on it, just whatever, just never have anything to do with that heaping pile of pus ever. It is horrid.
Well, to be fair, it is a movie that has been said to be so horrible that you would have to watch it to believe it.
No.
Now I have to watch it.
No, you don't.
What's it about?
No. Okay. So, anyway.
It's about Tommy Wiseau's acting career and how it went downhill.
So, that is the end of our podcast, ladies and gentlemen, and I appreciate you all coming out and listening to us. Please stay tuned for next week's podcast. I will, over the next few days, drop a hint as to what we're going to talk about on the podcast through the daily bulletins here at Streeter Township High School, so make sure you give a listen to those. I put those out daily as well. And from the podcast studio, room number 340, this has been Just a Mother Movie Podcast. Everybody say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right, that's it, guys. We'll talk to you next time. Such a good time.